This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The state's drought prompted an unprecedented meeting in Portsmouth last night as Seacoast community officials gathered to figure out how they could work together with the drought in their region growing more severe. And worries are piling up across the state as more towns impose mandatory water restrictions. Meanwhile, don't expect any relief from Hurricane Matthew. Forecasters say the storm won't bring any significant rain. Today in The Exchange, summer drought stretches into fall. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. How is the drought affecting your town? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have two guests for the hour. Dave Brooks is here, science reporter for the Concord Monitor, blogger at Granite Geek. And Dave, thanks for helping us out.
You bet.
Also with us, Brandon Kernan, manager of hydrology and conservation with the New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services. He's coordinator of drought management for the state. And Brandon, I'm guessing you're really busy in that role. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Well, how bad is it, Brandon? We talked 2 months ago. We've been hearing about this drought for a long time. How would you describe it?
Conditions are pretty dire. If we were rated on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the worst, I would give it an 8 or 9 at this point.
Wow, really?
Yes, at this point, hundreds of private wells are failing for homeowners that are without water and having to do something to replace their water supply. Businesses are failing. Our dairies are struggling, and I think we'll hear more about that later. And they're losing their livelihoods. Our rivers, in some cases, in the southern part of the state, have stopped flowing or at historic low flows. The fire risk is substantial already for this year. More than twice the acreage that we have burned on average has burned in our woodlands, and we haven't even gotten to the end of the vegetative growing season. So conditions are quite bad, and we're really concerned going forward because we count on this fall season as a big recharge season before we go into winter, where our precipitation often gets hung up in the snow and the ground freezes and it's hard to get down in there. So we're quite concerned at this point.
So we're counting on a wet fall to kind of get the ground ready for winter and then the year beyond.
That's correct. We are concerned about the recharge of our aquifers, refilling for our drinking water going into the winter months.
Wow. What are you hearing, Dave Brooks, as you cover science in the state?
Oh, very, very much the same thing. Talking about people with wells and dry. I commute right next to the Piscataquag River every day, and I've been watching it all year turn. It hasn't quite turned into disconnected puddles, but it's darn close. And I have my personal story is I live down in Mount Vernon in the Sauhegan Valley, which has been pretty hard hit as well. And I'm part of a citizen science project called Coco Ross, a really terrible name, Community Collaborative Rain, Hail, Snow Network. And charming, just comes trippingly to the tongue. And basically what it is people, there's several 10,000 of them around the country, at least 100 and 150 in New Hampshire, who basically measure their precipitation every day, how much rainfall or snow you've gotten in the last 24 hours. And I've been doing this for a number of years. And I went and looked at the charts for what they call the water year, which is October 1st. October 1st is the 12-month period that they measured in. And I looked at the precipitation I've gotten in my house as compared to the 30-year average.
You're on a private well.
I'm on a private well. There's no city water in Mount Vernon. I looked at it, and so it's starting out with the start of the water year in October 2014. So this is 2 years ago. And I was actually above average, above the 30-year average until April of 2015. And you'll see the little chart and the line sort of crosses it. And since then, I have been under – every month has been under except one has been under the average. And through the last – so since April of 2015, I am almost 15 inches below accumulated total.
15 inches,
which is –
that's a lot.
That's
water.
A lot. That's about 3 to 4 months normal rainfall. And so imagine, in order to get back to normal, I'd have to have twice as much rainfall as normal for the next 3 or 4 months, and that's not going to happen. So it's really, really accumulated, and that's why my well is dry.
Well, and charts are tough on the radio, but luckily now we have the web, so we've put Dave's charts on our website, nhpr.org.
Yeah, it's rather ugly for now,
slash exchange. That's okay. That's okay. And we'll also put it on Twitter. So if you want to look at it, you can check it out there. And, you know, Brandon, you mentioned the impact on farms. Joining us now on the phone is Lorraine Merrill. She's Commissioner of Agriculture, Markets, and Food for New Hampshire. She's also a dairy farmer herself in Stratham. And Commissioner Merrill, always good to have you. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Laura, and to all the guys at the studio.
Well, a dry summer followed by a dry fall. Commissioner Merrill, what are you hearing from the state's farmers?
Oh, it's really, really been extremely hard for farmers, especially in the hardest affected areas, those areas of severe to extreme drought, which is basically the four counties of Rockingham, Stratford, Hillsborough, and Merrimack are suffering the greatest impact. And then we have farmers in the counties beyond that who also have suffered losses, just not as severe.
Well, and speaking of losses, has anyone said to you, Commissioner Merrill, that, you know, I enjoy farming, but the drought is going to put me out of business. I have to do something else.
Yes, actually. Wow. We have a number of farms that are really at risk. The dairy sector is the most hard affected because, well, for several reasons. One is because this is compounding 2 years of milk prices that have been so low that farmers have been losing money significantly. So they have spent all the expenses that it takes to raise the crops for a year and not gotten those yields in, and therefore they don't have feed to feed their animals for the winter and into the next growing season. So much so that we actually have dairy farms that are running out of feed this fall already, which is simply unheard of. This is the time of year when silos and barns should be just bursting with stored hay and haylage and corn silage. Governor Hassan visited a dairy farm in Greenland a couple of weeks ago and saw their feed storage where they would store their haylage completely empty, just bare. Farmer said it's like Mother Hubbard's cupboard. And we have it's devastating because farmers, they don't have the money because of these low milk prices. They've already borrowed money up to the hilt. They don't have the money to buy feed to replace what they were unable to grow. And so that's why we're working with legislative leaders and the governor to fund both the Milk Producers Emergency Relief Fund, which is an existing program in New Hampshire law but hasn't been funded in the next biennium, the budget that we're going through, but they all recognize that this is really an emergency situation that isn't going to wait until next July. So there is an effort to have some emergency assistance funded that would especially target the drought areas for dairy farms. Then the other farms as well have suffered, and I think especially for the new and beginning farms that don't have a cushion built up, may not have much equity in their business. To have suffered losses this year is very, very rough. And all of our farmers have struggled, the vegetable and fruit growers, many of whom can irrigate their crops, or at least normally they can. Some of them had their irrigation ponds or wells go dry, and it's of a whole lot of extra labor and expense to do all that irrigating all season long. Like it's been
sure, you count on
very hard
rain
something.
Normally, and then you have to sort of rejigger your whole irrigation system.
Yeah, right. It's a whole lot of extra labor and management and expense to do that. Those who have the capacity have, and they've kept they've had plenty of produce to sell as a result, but. You know, another sort of unfortunate impact is it seems as though some of the public's gotten the message that, well, we're having this drought, so they maybe haven't been visiting the farm stands and the farmers markets as much, maybe thinking that there isn't produce there when actually there is. And there's no better time than now for people to get out and support their local farms, to get out to the farm stands and the farmers markets and the pumpkin patches and show their support for our local farmers.
Well, Commissioner Merrill, so has the federal government declared a disaster area in parts of New Hampshire because of the drought? If so, does that help New Hampshire farmers?
Well, the answer, the first part is yes. The Secretary of Agriculture has designated, actually all of our counties are eligible for disaster assistance. Coos County, not as a primary disaster county, but because it's contiguous to counties that have been declared primary disaster counties, the farmers are eligible for the program. The problem is that the programs are very limited. Mostly it's a matter of low-interest emergency loans, and the farmers who need the help the most are really, you know, taking on more debt is not going to be the answer or something that they can necessarily handle. There are some specific programs that have very sort of narrow targets. There is a program for livestock forages that only applies for pasture.
So it's not as generous and wonderful as it sounds, basically.
That's correct.
If you're a farmer, you don't want to take on more debt at this
Congress,
point.
Congress, in over successive farm bills in the last decade or so, has greatly reduced the kinds of disaster assistance payments that used to be available.
I want to ask you one last question. How's your own dairy farm doing in Stratham?
Well, we are in the that bullseye of the drought area in the Seacoast region, and we definitely have suffered crop losses this year. And when I, all summer long, Laura, I've had this sense that given how incredibly little precipitation we ever got, I mean, just even thunderstorm after thunderstorm would pass around either north or south of our area, it has seemed nearly miraculous that we had as good a corn crop as we did. But that said, it's off by more than 30%.
Wow, that's a lot.
And our hay and haylage, that's even more. That's typical across the drought areas. It's off a lot. You know, the first cutting of hay was pretty good. It wasn't great, but it was more or less normal. But after that, there have been almost nothing.
Okay. Well, Commissioner Merrill, good luck, and thank you.
Well, thank you, Laura.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
That's Lorraine Merrill. She's Commissioner of Agriculture, Markets, and Food for New Hampshire. She's also, as we heard, a dairy farmer herself and feeling many of the same struggles that other New Hampshire farmers are feeling. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. How is the drought affecting you? How is it affecting your community? Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. And Dave Brooks and Brandon Kernan, we got two questions on Facebook from Sandy in Nashua. She says, if our precipitation normalizes, how long until we are no longer in a drought situation? And Brandon, I wonder if you can answer that.
Well, it's difficult to say. It depends on the distribution of precipitation and the opportunity for it to infiltrate. So the intensity, time of year are all important questions. I think the best way to address that would be to say we need several large sustained rain events over a several-month period to get out of this. And if it doesn't happen before the ground freezes and our precipitation comes in the form of snow and sits on top of the ground, we're going to go into next year.
Wow, into next year. And I read yesterday, Brandon, that this drought has actually been going on for 12 months, even though we've only been talking about it recently.
Yeah, we started entering below normal precipitation averages about a year ago. And really, in some parts of the state, if you look back several years, we've been slightly below normal and having above average temperatures. So sort of the background before this drought really set in had us in a precarious position and more susceptible to its impacts.
Do you want to jump in too, Dave, on Sandy's question?
Well, he mentioned actually the above average temperatures, which is something that doesn't show up in the rainfall, but I think that's definitely a contributing factor. Is, of course, we know this summer was not only dry, but it was hot. And so what little precipitation there is or what moisture there is in the ground evaporates out or transpires out more quickly. And so I think that has definitely been a contributing factor, certainly to the way everything has turned brown, but also to the way water is getting pulled out of the ground more quickly than it used to.
Well, and here's Sandy's second question. And Sandy, thank you again. She says, what impact will this extreme drought have on established trees, especially New Hampshire forests and woods? And Sandy, thank you again. Dave, do you know anything about the impact on New Hampshire trees? I've read a fair bit about this.
Yeah, you just had a show on the foliage, exactly. That I don't know a whole lot about it. Obviously, trees are, they are they are multi-year to affect them. But anything that stresses trees for a number of growing seasons in a row is going to be bad. And this is it's part of the, sort of the changing climate. Is this kind of stress is more likely to happen from year to year. But I can't say specifically what
sure.
We're likely
to see. We did talk about the big concern that a lot of people have is, will the drought affect fall foliage? We did talk to the Forest Society's Dave Anderson just yesterday about this. Let's hear what he said.
It's really about the weather during the foliage season, not over the summer leading up to it.
But if a tree is stressed because of the drought over the summer, is it going to be capable of producing beautiful leaves?
It will produce. Well, that's more about next year's leaves, and the buds are already set for next year's forest.
So oh, really?
At the base of each leaf stem, the petiole, where that snaps off, is a little bud. In fact, they're losing their leaves in order to get through the winter and not dry out. The conifers have a different strategy. But the drought effect really is more about how, vigorous the trees will grow in subsequent years. And I think trees are adapted, especially in New Hampshire. There's regional variations. Trees are adapted to the sites and soils that they grow in and the range of environmental conditions.
That's Dave Anderson from the Forest Society talking to us yesterday about the drought's impact on fall foliage. So, Brandon, Commissioner Merrill mentioned the disaster declaration for the state of New Hampshire. What impact does that have on, towns that are struggling with this, people whose wells have dried up? Does that help at all?
The disaster declarations right now are mainly tied to agricultural interest. The state is actively trying to compile the impacts in other areas of the state due to the drought, both the type of impacts and the costs associated with those impacts. And we're going about that a couple of ways. The state has set up online a form for people to report their drought impacts, to describe where they are, the nature of them, and then the cost, the economic damage associated with it, be it a private well, a business, a water system, or even agriculture. And our hope is to come up with a total cost of the impact of drought so that our elected officials and commissioners can see what financial assistance or disaster assistance is available. Is there a potential to seek assistance from FEMA if we have really specific data that describes the impacts? The legislators and governor want this information to see if there's something they should be assisting with. So at their direction, we are compiling this information. And I encourage anyone who's experiencing a drought impact to go right on the Department of Environmental Services website or even the state's website, which has a drought icon link, which will take you to that impact reporting form so that we can collect that information and have good information. Because drought's tricky. Most natural disasters are obvious. A neighborhood will be impacted. A lot of homes will obviously have issues. Maybe wells will be flooded out. And all hands can go on deck and solve that problem and compile the impact. But drought is trickier in time and space in that today two wells in Bow might go dry and tomorrow a well in Windham and then a business in Stratum might have an issue. So we have to go about collecting this information a little bit differently than we do for other natural disasters.
So that's really interesting. So trying to get disaster assistance not for a big hurricane that hits or a big flood or a huge ice storm, but more pulling in data piecemeal over time, but saying this is a weather emergency in a way.
Right. If we were to place all these impacts in one town or one neighborhood, it would be national headline news. You know, hundreds of wells are damaged, businesses are knocked out due to a natural condition. But this is just because it's spread out in time and space, it's a little less obvious.
I think this is really interesting, Dave Brooks. Have you ever seen anything like this?
Well, you know, I always thought one of the great things about being in New England is we have, you know, ice storms and nor'easters to worry about. But I didn't really think we had to worry about drought. I sort of would laugh at those people out west, silly people moving in Arizona. You know, we don't have to worry about drought out here. So I've been here almost three decades, and we've had a couple of droughts, but absolutely nothing at all like this. I mean, not even close.
Yeah. So, there was a one back in 2000.
2000, but I don't remember that being – I don't remember many wells around where I am anyway going out. So,
what does it mean when a well goes out? I mean, I've heard about people having to dig a second well, but where do you find the water for that second well?
It generally entails having to hire a licensed well driller to come out and assess the problem. And perhaps the solution could be easy if you're lucky, and it could just be lowering the pump if that's an option for your well. But if your pump's already near the bottom of the well and your groundwater level now has gone to a point where you can't get water out of that well, it could involve drilling a new well, which could be a few thousand dollars to, in some places, $30,000. So it's a big issue for the private homeowner.
Well, and from a hydrology standpoint, if it's dry enough that your well dries out, what guarantee is there that that new well will find a new vein to tap into?
More often than not, if you drill deeper, you'll get some more water. And if not more water from the aquifer yielding it, at least you'll have the storage. So when you're not using water, you'll accrue water within your, you know, deeper well. But there are places in the state, often sort of hillside developments on ledge, where people have drilled multiple $20,000 wells, 1,000 feet or so deeper, and still have no water. And so there are some isolated occurrences like that.
You've drilled multiple, not you, but people have drilled multiple wells and still looking.
Correct.
Well, and then, of course, there's the problem of the dug well, which is, I think, most of what the hopefully most of what the dry wells are. Dug well, obviously being a well that's dug, oddly enough, into the soil or the sand, the old-fashioned kind of well. I have one on my property. When I bought the house, that was the only source of water, about 16 feet deep. And it has gone dry. Fortunately, I drilled a well. So a drill well that is, you know, a well is basically a hole in the ground that water falls into. The water that's moving around underground, it hits the hole and it falls into it, and then you collect it. So a dug well, it's the water that's moving around in the soil or the sand. And a drilled well, it's the water that's moving around in little cracks in the bedrock. So you have to drill way down into the bedrock. Unfortunately, I did that. And so those those wells are much less likely to go dry because they're older accumulated water. It takes a lot longer for the water to get down there. So
I know you've been working on a story on wells, Dave, and we'll maybe talk about that in a moment. And also we're going to talk with a Portsmouth water official, given the severity of the drought on the seacoast. All that's coming up, so stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, summer drought stretches into fall. The impact across the Granite State. Let's hear from you. How has the drought affected you or your community? Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests for the hour are David Brooks, science reporter for the Concord Monitor, blogger at Granite Geek. Also with us, Brandon Kernan, manager of hydrology and conservation with the New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services and coordinator of drought management for this state. And both of you, we're going to go now to Brian Goetz. He's deputy director at the Portsmouth Department of Public Works. And Brian, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Laura. Hello, Brandon, David.
Well, I heard you had an unprecedented meeting on the seacoast last night about this drought situation. What happened?
Well, actually, it was yesterday morning, but you know, I'm on the drought management team with Brandon and others, and we've had three meetings through the summer, which have been very helpful of gathering everybody to discuss the drought, the situation, contingencies, precipitation, and all that. And at the last meeting, I pulled Brandon to the side and said, look, you know, all the maps that show up very well and show the drought effects and status on DEF's website that does a very good job of sort of graphically, if nothing else, showing people the status of things. But anyway, Portsmouth and this region of the seacoast, we're the epicenter. We're the driest of the dry, and a lot of public water systems here. There are some, you know, people on private wells, but for the most part, public systems. So I said to Brandon, you know, maybe we should, it'd be good to try to pull together the water systems, everybody that runs a water system on the seacoast, and just get us together, kind of talk through where we're at, and really just, you know, commiserate a bit on, you know, how we're all, you know, getting by to some degree, what kind of restrictions we have on, and how we're dealing with the drought for our own water systems, and you know, contingency planning, potential interconnections. You know, some systems are interconnected, and you know, is there anybody that has water to give, so to speak? So you know, with DS's help, Brandon, you know, kind of spearheading as he has all along, we offered up a meeting yesterday morning in Madbury at our water treatment facility, invited all the water systems, and they all came. So
wow.
We had a full room. We had 12 water systems, everybody from Seabrook, Dover, Rochester, Durham, Exeter. We had a full room, and it was very good discussion. And, you know, it was very good for us to share thoughts, ideas, work with DES. We also had some hydrogeologists in the room to, you know, help us through some options we may have. So,
well, if I could ask you about that,
beneficial.
Brian. Yeah. So first of all, to the question of how bad is the drought in your area, the seacoast, you would say you're the driest of the dry.
We are. You know, we've been keeping records here. We track for the Portsmouth system. We have both surface and groundwater, so we track both. And our surface water reservoir is down, but the stream that feed it, I have essentially dried up. They're at 82-year record lows of all the years that they've been tracking stream flow. So
82-year record lows.
82 record lows in September. September, we only had 2 inches of rain right here. It was you know, Commissioner Merrill talking about the storms. I mean, I look at radar, and it goes north, it goes south. We've got little bits of rain, but it all seems to be, at least the bulk of it, has passed us by. We've gotten little spot storms, but nowhere near what we need to, you know, get ourselves up to even anywhere near normal.
Well, what kind of restrictions, Brian, have been imposed in Portsmouth, your town, or some of the surrounding towns? I mean, how tough are you guys getting?
Well, here in Portsmouth, we've been, you know, proactive all along, telling everybody it's dry way back in the spring of this year, because, of course, we didn't have much snow. We didn't have a wet winter. We had a dry spring and an early spring. So we've been on voluntary restrictions. We were on all summer just advising people. Due to the continued dry and the demands, you know, so it's a twofold problem of the water system. It's not only dry. Everybody wants to use the water because it's dry. So, you know, we were seeing demands go up, and we were seeing weather patterns. And so in August, August 16th, we put odd even restrictions on. They helped cut back demand somewhat.
That means sort of, if I'm in, explain odd even restrictions a little, please.
Well, we allowed watering on odd days and even days, no watering. So it's really just allowed the system catch up on those even days. And that did prove to help to cut back. But, you know, we didn't get any rain. We didn't get anything. Part of putting restrictions on is sort of kind of a foresight of what may come your way if you get tropical storms or whatever that, you know, bring you enough rain to get people to not need to water or want to water. So we went to a full no lawn watering restrictions on September 8th.
Just on September 8th. I'm kind of struck by that, Brian. You guys have been dealing with drought for a while, but until September 8th, just a month ago, you were allowing
Correct.
Folks to water their lawns?
Well, odd even. And one thing we can do, you know, we're fortunate. We have a very professional staff and a system that, you know, in real time, we can see how we're doing. I mean, we have a computer system and our operators on duty 24/7. So you know, we can track, you know, our supply versus demand and know how we're doing and be able to assess, you know, at what point are we really in need of, you know, putting the restrictions on.
So what happens,
and getting the word out.
What happens if somebody violates that restriction on lawn watering?
Well, we posted notice. You know, some people, you know, certainly with this day and age, you try to do everything you can through media. You know, we put press releases out, put it on a web page. We posted variable message boards. We had signs up in the city. But yet, you know, some people still may not have known. So we go out and we had staff posting sites. The first two notices are really just postings, let you know. A lot of times when our staff would talk to these people, oh, you know, I didn't know, or, oh, I'm trying to get my sprinkler set on the right program. Everybody's sprinkler has a different kind of program. So, you know, that, and then we would follow up, you know, if those, and a lot of these sites, you know, one day they might be watering, and sure enough, we let them know, and they did cut back. And then we see it in our pumpage. I mean, we went from, you know, pumping 6 million gallons prior to September to just, you know, the other day, last week, we're down to 4 million.
Okay, so,
that
so it's,
reduction
yeah, people are reducing their use.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so any fines imposed on people who insist on having that beautiful lawn?
Well, we haven't got to that point. We have a city council approved a $100 fine if people had a third notice, but we haven't had anybody get to that point. So we haven't had to do that. Again, the education has been really good, and compliance really has been good. You know, we appreciate everybody, you know, sharing the hardship with us, I guess, so to speak.
You know, Brian, you mentioned earlier that all these towns got together, unprecedented meeting, trying to figure out how to share resources, share ideas. Any bright ideas come out of that as to how these towns could band together and ease the pain a little bit?
Well, I think what came, the messaging, you know, we've talked about, especially if we move into, you know, the winter, like Brandon said, if we don't get, you know, the, here, you know, Matthew, it looks like it's going out to sea. You know, if we don't get any significant amount of rain, you know, we'll get through the winter. But then, you know, the big concern then would be, again, you know, spring of next year and moving into the summer with a greater deficit than we had this year. So we've talked about, you know, common messaging, working with DES, getting that out. And just to have us all in the room together was really great. I mean, was quite impressed with how all the systems are reacting. Even Brandon made a good comment that, you know, this last drought, which we both lived through, I was down in Hampton at the time, the last drought in 2002, systems were actually scrambling, you know, much more than they are this year.
So a little better prepared.
Yes, yes.
Well, Brian, thank you very much for being with us. I know you've got somewhere else to go, so I'll let you go.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. That's Brian Goetz, Deputy Director at the Portsmouth Department of Public Works. Let's hear from you, too. How has this prolonged drought affected your community, your own home, especially if you're on a private well? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Send us your questions and comments by email exchange at nhpr.org. Or again, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. So both of you, Brandon, you first, he talked about how Portsmouth went from saying, please don't water, to saying, okay, please don't water, and you can only do it on these days, to saying, you can't water your lawn. But I'm kind of struck by September 8th, just a month ago. We've been in this drought for a long time. I wonder what you're seeing in terms of individual towns restricting water use, what sorts of mandates or suggestions they're making.
At this point, we have about 180 water use restrictions in place throughout the state, and that could either be at the water system level or at the town level. There's two ways water restrictions can be put into place. The water system can do it for its customers, and then town can do it for all residents, no matter if you're on a private well or on a water system. And so out of about those 180, about half are outright outdoor watering bans for residential lawns.
Outdoor watering bans, so no lawn watering whatsoever.
Right.
Are you surprised there aren't more towns that have done that, given that you really don't need to water your lawn?
Well, it's a relatively new law that gave them the authority to do that, to actually regulate if people can water their lawn during a declared drought. And again, they can only use that authority during a drought. So I'm impressed with everyone sort of getting on board that this is a shared resource and that we need to get these restrictions in place. You know, groundwater is somewhat mysterious to a lot of people, and there's the idea that if my well doesn't have an issue, then there isn't a problem. But you know, local leaders, now that they have the information, are taking actions to ban residential lawn watering. In a lot of cases, I think they're compelled by local stories from the people they represent to do that. So I think it's moving in the right direction, and it's, you know, a very good use of this new law. It was just passed in 2007.
Do you want to jump in, Dave Brooks?
So I think part of the reason to push for outdoor lawn watering is it's a big use of water, but also it's a psychological thing. You drive around, you see somebody's sprinkler going, and it feels like, well, it's really not a problem. And or they're doing it, so, you know, I'm not going to cut back. So I really think a part of the reason to put in the ban is just to kind of make everybody realize that this one very visible way is a marker that things are serious.
So I have also heard, and Dave, I want to ask you about this, given that some towns have imposed restrictions, some other towns, including Concord, have just said, pretty please don't do that, but there are no mm-hmm. restrictions in place. Some people on social media have resorted to what's called drought shaming.
Absolutely.
Where they post pictures of, you know, sprinklers going mad or someone's bright green lawn in the midst of dry.
It drives me crazy. My commute, I go past this one house that has its sprinkler going all the time. Every time, you know, obviously my timing is just to drive past it. And the temptation to stop and bang on their door and say, don't you know there's a drought? It's very strong. I haven't succumbed yet.
Well, so what do you think about drought shaming, though? I mean, is that going a little too far, or is that sort of where we're at in this era of everybody sharing stuff on social media?
Well, I mean, drought shaming is, you know, human interaction. We do that all the time for pretty much anything we do is you think about how other people are going to react to it. And I don't think it's unreasonable when it's a shared resource, as you talked about. So you're absolutely correct. Groundwater is this mysterious thing. And I have no idea whether my well is on the same aquifer as the well across the street or is not. So you have no idea of knowing whether the person's usage across the street is going to directly affect your well or not.
So
you kind of have to assume it will. And so there's sort of a – you know, we're all in this together. We're all in the same lifeboat. So, you know, get your act together, buddy, and join up.
Well, we got an email from our friend Dave Anderson again at the Forest Society. He says, remember, there is no drought in the White Mountains in northern New Hampshire. The drought is a phenomenon of southern New Hampshire. And the only place where leaves are not a big deal or tourist attraction is the seacoast and the lower Merrimack Valley regions. He says the leaves draw people to the Monadnock region and Lakes region and White Mountains and Upper Valley where the lack of rainfall has not been acute. Dave, thank you for chiming in there. I wonder what you think about drought shaming, Brandon.
Well, you know, it is something that's happening. But on the flip side, you know, in other parts of my life outside of work, where I'm at my kid's sports game or what have you, or in the store, I'm actually hearing people brag about how brown their lawns are. And so
drought bragging, can we call it that?
There has been a positive movement, I think, for the majority of the public. And there's always the select few that aren't on board. And I think oftentimes they just aren't educated. What I heard from some town leaders yesterday at that Seacoast Water meeting that Brian Getz just spoke of is that when they went and knocked on doors, people weren't aware that this was a request that was made. That people aren't always viewing the news or on Facebook. I mean, they're too busy to get information that way. And once they were informed, they did make changes. So I think we're getting down to just a very few people that aren't cooperative.
Yeah, it's interesting. The last time we talked 2 months ago, Brandon, about this, I started noticing what was happening just in my own little commute home. And sure, the average homeowner, you know, they don't get the message. They don't see the sign. You know, everybody's got stuff going on in their lives. But I did see a couple major institutions. I won't name names, but a major federal building here in town and a major healthcare provider here in town, both having, you know, sprinklers ablazing.
Right.
Those people you would expect.
You might expect, but you know, it's probably a complex chain of command there, and the word didn't get to the right person. And I bet if the right contacts were made, that there could be some behavior adjustments there too.
Let's take a call, gentlemen. This is Nicole in Madison. Hi, Nicole. You're on the Exchange. Welcome.
Hi. How are you?
Fine.
I was just calling to tell you about our experience. I had gone to visit a neighbor to take care of her dog a few weeks ago, and she had just had her well drilled because hers had gone dry.
Wow.
On my road, and she had the well driller told her they had just put in four in this area right in my road this summer. And the next day, I met another neighbor, same road. They were without water. They have now been without water for 3 weeks. And my husband and I have been checking our well as a neighbor that shares a driveway with us, and they have a well within feet of ours, and we're both standing at about 3 feet.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So no water for 3 weeks.
And we've never had an issue with our well.
What is she doing, Nicole, for water?
We have several springs in the area that you're in Sandwich and North Conway, you can get free water, filling up to big jugs, which is what we plan to do as soon as ours goes dry.
Well, good luck, and I hope it won't. Yeah.
It's just right here in this area, which is in the southern part of Mount Washington Valley, it is really serious.
Okay.
Because there's no way. I mean, these estimates start at $16,000 to drill a new well.
Nicole, thank you so much, and good luck to you and your neighbors. My goodness. And you talked earlier, David Brooks, about just the challenges of keeping these wells wet.
Absolutely. So, and just to follow up briefly on what the caller just said, I have a story coming up where I talked to a woman whose well went dry, and so she called the local well driller, and he said, well, you know, I'm really busy. I won't be able to get to you for several weeks. And what's really good is that the well drilling company is owned by her son, and he still couldn't get to his mother. So that's how busy the well drilling companies are. So, the Doug Wells in particular When they go dry, I've actually heard of people buying water and dumping it into their dug well, thinking it will fill back up, which is almost always not a good idea, because the reason your well is dry is that there's no water in the soil around it. So you fill it with water, and all the water will leak out back into the soil around it. So obviously, if you run out of water, you either have to go to these springs. There's one in New Boston I've driven past for many, many years, and I've seen people stop in there just because they like the water occasionally. There's actually a sign. I believe DES has a sign up saying, by the way, this water has not been tested. You shouldn't use it for drinking. But they go anyway. But every day now, people are filling up there.
Wow. Okay. Well, coming up in just a moment, more on the drought. We'll talk to the town manager in Londonderry, also a very dry town, and we'll hear from you. The exchange number 1-800-892-6477. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, drought continues in the Granite State and the impacts become severe in some areas, as we're hearing. Join us. How has the drought affected you or your town? 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Brandon Kernan is here. He's coordinator of drought management for the state with the New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services, along with Dave Brooks, science reporter for the Concord Monitor, blogger at Granite Geek. And both of you, we're going to go now to another town that's been struggling with drought, Londonderry. Kevin Smith is town manager there. Kevin, welcome back to The Exchange. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me on, Laura. And by the way, I heard before the break you said Londonderry was a dry town. I just want to clarify, we do have 3 craft breweries and 1 meadery, just so no one gets the wrong idea.
The old version of a dry town, a town where alcohol is not served. Well, and, you know, earlier in the program, Brandon Kernan mentioned, I asked him, you know, how bad is the drought statewide? And he said on a scale of 1 to 10, it's about an 8.5. How would you assess it in Londonderry, Kevin?
Well, it's probably about that as well here, which is why very recently the town council here took the advice of the Department of Environmental Services and of all the state agencies and enacted a townwide water ban on the watering of residential lawns, because we just want to send the message that it's imperative at this point that people conserve water as much as they can.
Well, and how did that go over with the folks in Londonderry, Kevin?
You know, for the most part, I think people appreciated it. We did have some complaints from folks who invested money in new lawns, and some of the landscaping companies showed up to the public hearing as well, asking us to carve out some exemptions. But what we've told them is this is a situation where you know, we don't want to be carving out exemptions. We want to do something that we feel is for the greater good here, which is that, you know, everybody is taking water from the same aquifers. And, you know, while someone may have invested money in a brand new lawn, if someone's well goes dry, that could cost them just as much money. If not more, to have to replace that well. And so, you know, it's generally been received fairly well. If anything, I think some people may have wished we had done it before now. But as one of our counselors said, we can't fix yesterday, but we can certainly fix things going forward. And we think it was the prudent decision to make.
You know, you mentioned a ban on residential lawn watering. Kevin, what about businesses?
Well, we wish we could. And that's something that's actually come up quite a bit, is people asking, well, why do the businesses get to still water their lawns? And state law only allows us to put a restriction on residential lawn watering and not the businesses. And I think that's something that may need to be looked at by the state legislature next year, because it doesn't seem, unless it's something that's vitally necessary to operating the business, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense that, you know, the lawns of the businesses can look really green still, but the residences, aren't going to be watering their lawns. I will say that we did in our ordinance encourage businesses to also voluntarily practice not watering their lawns, trying to conserve as much as possible. And we're also going to be sending letters to the businesses in town, asking them to abide by it.
Asking them. Yeah, that's interesting. I had an appointment a week or two ago at a particular healthcare office, and super green lawn. It almost looked kind of funny these days,
yeah. You
know, Kevin. And I said something to the physical therapist I was seeing, and she said, yeah, there's some, she said, there's some empty rental space in this building, and the guy who owns the building wants it to look nice for potential rental customers.
Yeah, you know, it's I can get that when we're not in a drought, but when we've been declared an extreme drought, again, that just doesn't seem to make a whole lot of logical sense. We're all in this together, and I think we've all got to be doing our part, whether you're a business or just a property owner in town, a resident in town. As I said before, you know, unless you're on municipal water, which we don't have a lot of here in Londonderry, and even the municipal, you know, water companies have put their own restrictions in place. But a lot of times people think, well, I've got a private well, and in their mind, they're thinking it's their own well, that's their own water. But again, they're all coming from the same aquifer sources.
What else can you do in Londonderry, Kevin, besides this suggestion to businesses, this residential lawn watering ban? What else can you as town manager do? Besides the rain dance.
Yeah, right. In some ways we're limited, again, by what the state allows us to do. As you know, we're not a home rule state, and so we're only given the authority of what we can do by the state. But at the same time, we're doing a lot of education, and we've even asked the police, you know, if they get calls or they drive by and see people are watering their lawn, we've asked them to educate people first, before they write up a citation. Let's educate folks first. Let them know we do have a water ban. And we've talked a lot about it at our council meetings, at any of our public meetings. We bring it up and tell people it's not just lawn watering, too. It's everything from, you know, when you're brushing your teeth, turn off the faucet. Don't keep the water running the whole time. Maybe you wait until the dishwasher is entirely full before you put it on. And that may sound like small things to people, but all of that stuff adds up. And a lot of it right now is just education.
Well, Kevin, it's good to talk to you. Thank you very much and good luck.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Laura.
Kevin Smith, town manager in Londonderry. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Brandon, I got to hear from you for a second. You know, there he is trying to impose water restrictions, trying to save the wells in his town. He told residents they can't water their lawns, but he said state law does not allow him to tell businesses that they also can't do that.
Right. He's correct. The law that was passed in 2007, it was originally drafted by a legislative appointed commission on groundwater management in New Hampshire that was in place for about 10 years. And the commission in its original drafted legislation did include all lawn watering. But as we went through the legislative process, there was a lot of concern from different places about sort of how broad the proposed law was. Some people felt like if I own a 100-acre business and want to water a patch of grass near my sign, I should be able to. Other people felt like watering golf courses was necessary because that's tied to the economy and jobs, and there's other human health considerations. And so as you went around the committee, the legislative committee, it became clear that each person had problems with certain aspects of the bill, and the only thing we could get consensus on was residential lawn watering. So rather than lose the whole thing, they charged ahead with that. And that was a gigantic step. I don't think there's any other state in the country that has an explicit law that says during a declared drought, you can regulate someone's water use from a private well relative to watering grass. So it was a huge step, and it was a good thing. And, of course, we should revisit it if we see that there should be improvements.
Dave?
I would say this is where drought shaming could really come in. Is you should post something online about a local business if you see they have a really green yard and everybody else doesn't. Put it online, and that will affect them very quickly. And if these business owners are smart, they'll put up a big sign in the front of their yard saying, I no longer water at all, and brag about it. And I think that would be a smart move. And
woo, advocating for drought shaming, Dave. I don't know. I mean, maybe they've got their reasons.
No, they don't have reasons. No, it's just a yard. Come on. You can go brown.
Will it come back next year?
Now, that's a good question. So I have a field behind my barn that was because I have a couple sheep on it, and they had just grazed it down to nothing, and I thought it was dead. And I actually got a couple inches of rain last month, and it came back much better than I thought. The fact that it looks like it's dead doesn't mean it's actually dead. But there's no question this will absolutely hurt people who want pretty lawns.
All right. Well, a couple emails have come in. Here's Diane, who says, I encourage everyone who has a small garden to use water barrels to collect whatever rainwater does come down. You can make your own with a garbage can, mosquito netting, and a bungee cord. Rainwater is better for your plants than chlorine for those who have city water. And that's Diane in Portsmouth, where, as we heard earlier, it's the driest of the dry. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR. Let's check in with our fall fun drive. And back to our listeners, both of you, and Gordon's in Barnstead. Hi, Gordon. Go ahead. You're in The Exchange. Welcome.
Good morning.
Morning.
My name is Gordon Preston. I'm a selectman in Barnstead. I listened to all your discussions. Yes, it's all very well. Finally, we're realizing that water is a very profitable commodity. And the town of Barnstead recognized this 10 years ago. So did the big water companies, by the way, Nestle, Poland Springs, people like this. As it stands, other than Barnstead and now several other towns, they can buy a plot of land, drill and into the deep aquifers. And we don't know how much water's under New England. We know there's a lot in the sub-aquifers. We don't know how they're even connected. But the water companies can remove hundreds of thousands of gallons for bottling. The state needs to take a close look at that. You cannot put something, a commodity such as water, into private industry hands.
Well, and Gordon, thank you for the call. Now, Brandon, I remember a bunch of years ago this came up in sort of area towards the seacoast concerning water bottling and whether it would suck up too much out of the groundwater. Can you highlight what the rules are around private companies pulling water out of the ground to make, bottled water or beer or whatever?
Sure. New Hampshire has been very progressive in protecting its groundwater resources, both quality and quantity. And over the years, beginning in 1998, with changes to the law being made up to a few years ago, there's been some very detailed statutes established that protect existing water users and environmental resources, water resources, from impacts associated with any kind of large groundwater withdrawal, be it a bottling facility, a golf course, or a new municipal well. And so it's a basically a 2-3 year process with several hearings, lots of testing. And at the end of the day, you have to demonstrate the proposed withdrawal won't cause adverse impacts, and also that you'll have a long-term monitoring and reporting program to the state so you can verify that assessment.
Well, and speaking of monitoring, I did want to give you another opportunity, Brandon, to just remind people about how they can contribute their own personal experiences, and we've heard so many this hour, to that DES website, and then that all gets compiled, and maybe New Hampshire gets some drought assistance.
Yes, we encourage people to go to nh.gov, the state of New Hampshire's webpage, click on the drought icon. You'll see it right in the upper right-hand corner, and that'll take you to the Department of Environmental Services webpage where you'll see the impact reporting forms that you can fill out.
And then it all gets put together. And then what happens from there, Brandon?
We can provide that to the leaders of our agencies and elected officials and see if there are opportunities for federal assistance.
Okay. Well, I want to thank both of you very much for being here. And I want to remind everybody that you can also see on our website, nhpr.org/exchange, Dave Brooks' own water chart of his own personal well.
How dry
you are. That's right. That's right. We'll put that on Twitter and also on our website. And Dave Brooks, thank you also for being here. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Can I take this cup of water home
yes.
with me? Okay, thanks.
You certainly can. And Brandon, thanks a lot for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. The senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Our intern is Liz Torrey. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Canoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.